Would you be seated, please? Simon Peter has stubbed his toe 3 times on various rocks and twigs in this wretched wilderness. If he'd had half a brain, he'd have brought a lantern with him. Is Jesus nuts coming out here in the middle of the night like this? But no matter, there he is over there. Finally, Simon pauses only a moment before he bursts on the scene, shattering the stillness of the dawn, thundering like an untrained puppy into the exquisite focus of an act of prayer. In that fleeting instant, a question takes momentary shape in his mind. Why does he do this? I must ask him one day how to pray. And in the very next moment, "Master, there you are. Great news. There's a whole crowd assembled outside Abe's house right this minute, and they're asking for you. Come on, hurry up. They've brought sick and the lame and even a few lepers. The whole town heard about last night. Come on, Jesus, come on. This is a terrific opportunity." And Jesus rubs his eyes, as those who are deep in prayer are wont to do when they reorient themselves to the horizontality of life. And he says, "No. No, I am not going to do that. In fact, not only am I not going back to town with you, I'm not going to be labeled as someone whose primary ministry is healing. So, Simon, you go back to town. Get the others and tell them to pack a bag. Tell them that we are going on to the neighboring towns on a preaching mission." It's a fascinating interchange, even unembellished by decanal imagination. And it sets before us 2 wise and stringent cautions. When I was an adolescent, I longed, as most teenagers do, to be, at least teenage girls, pretty, shorter, to be athletic, to have clothes like my friend Kathy's, all of which was pretty much constitutionally out of the question. Now, I'm not sure that my parents managed to console me to any satisfactory degree, but they did set before me alternative longings, longings which became for me and, dare I suggest, countless others, an untested but presumably self-evident theory about what is really important in life. So from my mother, this: "Don't worry about the things you can do nothing about, dear. What really matters is to be popular." And from my father: "Find something you're good at and stick with it." Thank you for getting it. The baldness of these 2 statements, plucked as they are from any context or qualifications, reveals my parents to be stupid, and they weren't. They are simplistic and misguided principles. But I suggest that together they constitute 2 pieces of the wisdom of this age, and that they exercise a far greater power over our choices and our sense of self-worth than than we are generally alert enough to admit. Now you may ask, how did we get from Jesus' wilderness quiet time to the bottled advice of Ansley Tucker's parents? Maybe yours too. Well, it isn't so long a leap, actually. For it seems to me that what Jesus rejects in Simon's eager invitation to come and do some more of his healing tricks, which I suggest is how people saw them, precisely the twin sirens of popularity and competence. What Simon offers Jesus is the adulation of the crowd. All he has to do is open his mouth, do one more miracle, and they will love him. See what a success the master is. But Jesus doesn't fall for it. He isn't about to make the approval of others the barometer of his success. Sometimes, doing the right thing entails frustrating the designs of others, of making people darned mad. Jesus quite simply refuses to pander to misplaced expectations. He will not be seduced by praise or fawning, no matter how good it feels, no matter even how big an audience it guarantees him. It is a salutary story, because popularity, unlike good looks and change tight and athletic prowess or even Kathy Lauk's clothes, can be got after and achieved. But more than this is the almost imperceptible reorientation of Jesus' ministry. The reason the crowds are up before dawn, waiting for him, is that only last night, as Mark had it, all who were sick had gathered at the door of Simon and Andrew, and it seems that Jesus had only got around to curing many of them. The villagers are quite simply back for more. They recognize in Jesus this extraordinary gift for healing, and by cracky, he had better get himself over to Abe's place and exercise it. That is, find something you're good at and stick with it. But for Jesus, it isn't that simple. No matter how gifted a healer he is, no matter how much work there is for him to do in Capernaum, I mean, imagine, easy work and lots of it. Jesus also feels a strong call to the ministry of proclamation. Now, granted, as Jesus begins his tour of Galilee, he doesn't desist from a ministry of healing, but he is truly wary of allowing it to assume a disproportionate importance in his total ministry. And he actively discourages people again and again from casting him in the role of temple magician. For you see, sometimes the thing that we find the easiest is really little more than the path of least resistance. For Jesus, a quick way to win people's attention and hearts, it's popularity. The truth is that just because we are good at something is no proof that it is our primary vocation. It may be that God is calling us to a much more difficult, even darker path, a path which will challenge our easy assumptions and call us beyond our natural abilities. A path, perhaps, where we shall stub our toes and need a light. A path others may think us nuts to have chosen, a path whose ways are made known to us in the stillness of dawn, and whose wisdom is revealed in the exquisite focus of an act of prayer. Oh, and by the way, how does he pray like that, anyway?